everybody. Welcome back to Paddock Project. The first race of the year is done and dusted, and we have a recap for you. And it's also a Chinese Grand Prix preview because we have a double, triple header already happening. Crazy. But I am recording with none other than my sister, Sloane. Hello, Sloane. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Tiggy. Happy to be here.
Yay. You came to the Austin Grand Prix this past year, so you have been to a race. You also came to an IndyCar race, Laguna Seca, with me last year as well. So you've been in and around, but it's your first time on the pod. And one announcement before we dive in is that we released new merch this week. So exciting. It's our Sunday Sweats collection. I'm wearing the sweatshirt, and it's got some fun detailing on the sleeves, and there are different colors. There's blue and black for the regular Paddock Project, and then we have a green one for Planet Paddock and an orange one for Progress Paddock. So green for sustainability in motorsport, orange for women in motorsport, and then we have some other fun things, including a shirt for your little ones, introducing Junior Paddock, which is very exciting. So the link will be in our episode description. It's in our Instagram bio, et cetera, et cetera. But so excited, and I literally cannot take them off. They're like these sweatsuits that are, the vision was what you would wear to watch a race on Sunday, whether that's 6 a.m. your time, 2 p.m. your time, or midnight your time. And they've been so comfortable. Okay, so we luckily got to watch the Australian Grand Prix live in San Francisco last night. We had a watch party. So that was such a good vibe. We hosted it with West Coast Formula One. So thank you to them for co-hosting with us. Thank you to SFAC, San Francisco Athletic Club, which is right around the corner, Sloane, from your apartment. How convenient. They hosted us. And then Red Bull also gave us lots of fun drinks and hats and stuff to give out. So that was so fun. Shout out to Erin from West Coast Formula One. It's actually a funny story. I found her and West Coast Formula One through the Race Weekend magazine, and I reached out to them because I was like, oh, I just came back from I just moved back to California. Who knew that there were people hosting all these watch parties? So fun to collaborate. We got to scream and gasp and all the things together for a crazy race. People brought bingo cards. People also brought extra screens and headphones. Everybody was fully dialed in. But Sloane, what did you think of the vibe in the race? What a crazy first race of the season.
Oh my God, it was so much fun. The venue could not have been more perfect. We had every single screen trained on the race, which actually is the first time I've been to that bar and ever seen that before. It was fully for the F1 fans, and everybody came out wearing all their merch and brought the energy. And yeah, it was just a really great time.
So fun. Yeah, it's always fun to see a bar packed, especially full of women. And what a great race. We're lucky on the West Coast to get a 9 p.m. start time for a race. So that was a treat. But we're going to go through a bit of a quick, in case you missed it, for anyone who has not had the pleasure of watching this race, because if you have not yet watched it, I highly recommend you do. It was actually insane and very worth the watch. But due to the rain and the chaos, more than half the battle of this race was just staying out of trouble and finishing the race. Everybody started on inters. There was an aborted start due to Isaac's spin on the formation lap, which was so sad. We had a lot of safety cars throughout the race. We had four rookie DNFs, five if you count Alonso, our forever rookie in our heart, and then Sainz as well DNF'd. The tire strategy was key. Cars were going from inters, which they started on, to slicks and then back to inters, all happening at very crucial moments. And there were lots of safety cars involved. So the timing of that was key. And we had our very first taste of McLaren's flavor of papaya rules this season, where Oscar, clearly the faster car at the beginning of the race, and he was within DRS range of Lando, was told to hold position. That was due. We'll talk about that a little bit later in our thoughts on that. But it was interesting that first race of the season, we already have some team orders happening. and then the true heartbreak moment was Oscar for his home race, spinning out into the grass relatively late in the race. So he was able to reverse and get back going again, but he did tumble out of the points at his home race when it looked so promising. So that was a bummer, but we got another McLaren win. We had Lando on the top step of the podium. It was not without Max breathing down his neck, finishing within a second of him. And then George Russell, who managed to have a relatively quiet and uninterrupted race, all things considered, rounding out the podium in P3. But for me, I think the real highlights were P4 through P7, where we had Kimi Antonelli, a rookie, in P4. He became the second youngest point scorer in history behind Verstappen. We had Albon in P5 in a Williams. We had Stroll in P6 in the Aston Martin. Nico Hülkenberg in P7 in a Kick Sauber. So they must be feeling pretty good. And then notably, we had a Williams and a stake finish ahead of both Ferraris. So we had Charles P8, Oscar P9, Lewis P10 rounding out the top 10. I am currently number 429 in our Grid Rival Fantasy League. So predictions are not going great so far, but it was really fun to play bingo with you all. And of course, live chat in the Discord. So enough of the summary. Let's dive into MVPs. Sloan, who do you got?
I'm going to have to go with Alex. Yes, I thought it was a really great moment for Williams. Obviously, his fifth place finish was huge considering where the team was just a year ago. I thought it was really nice that he gave such a shout out to his strategist.
Including Carlos.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that was so fun during the race, just seeing Carlos in there with the headset on.
I
thought it was good, clean driving. He didn't make any major mistakes. And I think, it was just fun to see him start the season off that way.
Totally. I was looking at some stats. It's Williams' highest finishing position since Spa in 2021. He equaled his entire 2024 points tally in one race, which is crazy. First race of the season. And it's his personal best result since 2020. So great way to start the season. I completely agree with that MVP. I think I'm going to give mine to Kimi Antonelli. He was my driver of the day vote. Just an absolutely incredible performance as a rookie in such a chaotic race. I cannot believe that A, he managed to finish, and B, he managed to finish P4 right behind Russell. I think if I were Toto Wolff right now, I would be feeling pretty good about myself. I'd be feeling very smart. I'd be thrilled with George's result, and then also just very proud of Kimi as the only rookie who really shone in this race. He finished P4. He then had an investigation and subsequent penalty that bumped him to P5, but then upon further review, he was reinstated to P4. So what happened was Mercedes petitioned for a right of review, and then a hearing took place where Mercedes presented what was, I think, a video from the roll hoop camera, which previously was unavailable to the stewards. And so with all of that considered and all the conditions and everything, his P4 was reinstated. So very exciting.
Yeah, our MVPs kind of at odds with each other, aren't they, Tiggy?
Yeah, I guess we swapped positions. Albon was going to be P4 and then Kimi was reinstated to P4. How about your LVP, Sloan?
My LVP is going to have to be the Aussie curse. Oh. Obviously, we didn't see Piastri make the podium. We obviously didn't have Jack Doohan finishing the race either. So that was unfortunate.
Yeah, it's sad. There has never been an Australian standing on the podium at his home race, which is such a bummer because it was really looking close for Oscar there. For my LVPs, I think I'm going to have to give it to the McLaren team order situation and the Ferrari radios. Now, I know the McLaren situation is tough, but we kind of explained already what happened. Oscar was within DRS range of Lando. Was definitely the faster car. And then McLaren got on the radio and said, hold position. And Oscar said, I'm the faster car, but okay. And what they told to Lando was that they were going to, I guess for safety reasons, try to clear the back markers, make the tire transition, and then they would be free to race. But by the time that they were free to race, Oscar was many seconds behind. I think maybe confidence issues. He had a little bit of a wobble. And then by the time they were free to race, he was 3 seconds behind Lando. So there wasn't really much to do there. And so I just think it's the first race of the season. I think I probably would have let them race and not told them to hold position. I don't know if the back markers is really that big of a safety issue or consideration. So that seems strange to me. And then my second LVP was the Ferrari radios. Man, those were tough to listen to. I think we knew reality would hit at some point with, you know, Lewis and all the incredible aura around the team and the rollout before racing started. But of course, there were some tough comments on the radio, and we'll get to some of the details there, but I think that was a little bit tough to hear. And reality definitely snapped back into place after a lot of the incredible vibes over the off season with the Ferrari teammates. And now that we're back into the reality of racing, there's some tough things to listen to. So for hot takes, I think I was 0 for 4 on my predictions. I said that Oscar would win, did not happen. I said Lewis would be P2, did not happen. I said Lando would be P3. I had him in P3. Obviously, he did win the race, so I guess I don't think I even get a half a point for that. And then I said Williams double points, so only 1 of 2 for that as well. Rough for me. So jumping into practice, very quick highlights. I think really the two main talking points were Ollie Berman crashed twice, which was a big bummer. Maybe some nerves, and it's always tough when you get a little bit of shaky confidence after crashing once. And he's a rookie. There's a lot to do. But of course, we saw him jump into several races last year and didn't really have any issues. So hopefully this is just kind of first full season jitters and he'll be back. The other main talking point from practice was Sainz was looking really quick and Williams was looking pretty good. It was clear from practice that the gravel was punishing, especially at turn 6. I think Laura Winter had a quote that she said, "It's a track that bites back," and it definitely did. We saw a little bit of that, of course, with the rain and some of the grass and the gravel trips that we saw in the race, but it is sort of a punishing track. And then one of the other things I noticed right away from practice was the Louis Vuitton branding. Sloan, what did you think of that?
Hilarious, especially considering we just split a bottle of Ferrari Trento just an hour before in honor of the switch. So seeing that immediately on the track was a funny little jump scare.
Yeah. And I think I asked maybe on TikTok what people thought of it. And I was seeing some comments in the Discord and people were really torn. I think some people liked it. I personally would much rather look at Louis Vuitton branding than some of the other sponsor options that are out there. But I think some people thought it wasn't as fun or innovative or inventive as people were hoping, because it is LVMH, it is Louis Vuitton. They probably could have done something absolutely incredible, but I thought it was very clever. I liked it. It was all over, so it was hard to miss. But let's jump into quali. The spreads were tight, but there were not a lot of clean laps to go around. Everyone sort of had little wobbles and things here and there. McLaren was pretty quickly showing their speed and laying their cards on the table. I think they were about 0.4 ahead of the rest of the field at one point. And so it was kind of clear that McLaren from the get-go has a very, very strong car when it comes to pace.
For Q1 knockouts, we had Ocon, Berman, Antonelli, Lawson, and Hülkenberg. Berman had a gearbox issue, so he couldn't even partake.
Yeah, it was actually interesting. The rookies I didn't necessarily expect to make it through to Q2 were the ones who made it. Isaac Hajar, Jack Doohan, and Gabriel Bortoleto. I feel like we've heard so much more about Liam Lawson and Kimi Antonelli, and Berman, of course, didn't even get the chance to participate. But it was cool to see some of the underdog rookies, so to speak, make it through to Q2, though they all did get out in Q2. So for Q2 knockouts, we had Bortoleto, Hajar, Doohan, and both Aston Martins, Alonso and Stroll. Hamilton took a spin in Q2, which caused a yellow flag, and that ruined the last flying lap for a couple of drivers, most notably Doohan, who was on a pretty good lap at that point. But notably, both Williams made it into Q3, which was very exciting. We had 7 constructors in Q3, but notably, of course, no Aston Martins. And it was down to Piastri and Norris at the end. Oscar got provisional pole. The crowd went wild. But then literally a split second later, Norris bested him for pole. So we had Norris on pole. We had Oscar P2, a McLaren front row lockout, which was a great way to start the season. Then we had Verstappen, Russell, Yuki Tsunoda, Albon, Leclerc, Hamilton, Gasly, and Sainz rounding out the top 10. But a question that I was asking myself after quali was about the Racing Bull versus the Red Bull. Obviously, Max is insane in terms of pace, but Yuki up there was looking pretty good. So I was like, is the Racing Bull faster than the Red Bull on pace? And where is Liam Lawson? So we'll talk a little bit more about that later, but I thought that was super interesting to see and good for Yuki to be up there. Okay, so some talking points for the race. I think, first off, rain always delivers. It was an insane rainy intro to the season. I think it was Erin who said this while we were watching, but she was like, everything and nothing is happening. And it felt so true. Like there were so many crashes, so many spinouts, but it also felt like we weren't really getting much in terms of who's fast, who's not. Like it's really hard to tell pace in a race situation like that. So I feel like we still don't fully know who's looking amazing given those conditions. One thing that jumped out to me right away was the graphics are way better this year. I think better pit stop graphics where you can actually see the timing of the pit stop and then also how long that they've been going for the pit. So not just the actual like wheel change that's usually 2 to 3 seconds. I also really like the exclamation points for under investigation and the penalties. So that was really cool to see. But I think the first talking point I want to discuss is the rookies. So we talked about Isaac Hadjar out on the formation lap and the aborted start there. He clearly was very emotional coming out of the car. There's so much that leads up to this moment for a first time rookie in a Grand Prix. And to see him spin and not be able to partake in the race at all, just in the formation lap, was so sad. And I think one of the most beautiful moments that I've ever seen in this sport is Anthony Hamilton, Lewis Hamilton's dad, going to comfort him and talk to him and make sure that he was doing okay. It just makes so much sense that that man is the person who raised Lewis Hamilton. But I thought it was such a beautiful moment. And contrasting that display of pure humanity with comments like Helmut Marko saying that it was a cry fest and it was embarrassing. Like you can just see two very different extremes of the sport. And I was really disheartened to see those comments by Helmut Marko. And someone did message us about David Coulthard and Julian Palmer, I guess apparently didn't have the best comments on it either. I personally didn't hear those, but if that's the case, that's disappointing that, you know, you can't give rookies some grace in a situation like this where he was clearly emotional and upset. And you can have your own opinions about how to handle that. But until you're in that situation, I think it's pretty hard to judge. But yeah, the reaction at the bar, Sloan, I feel like was crazy.
Yeah, you had half the room being like, oh, come on, get yourself together. And then yeah, a lot of other people being like, you know, this poor guy, it's his first race. And it was just, you never know how you're going to handle that until you're in their shoes.
100%. And then Jack Doohan crashed on the first lap and then Carlos spun out, which made the rookies look a bit better. Williams mechanics in the garage were just so sad. But then as we talked about, Carlos put his strategist hat on and helped make the call to switch to inters for Albon, which helped him to the P5 position that he finished in. And then Berman finished, but he finished last. So it was just him and Kimi who finished the race. And Kimi is arguably the only one who had a decent race. But I think the thing I want to discuss here is, should we have expected more from the six rookies, or was this too chaotic of a race and too chaotic of conditions to have any expectations at all? I think my personal opinion is it depends on the driver. I think I personally would have expected maybe more from a Liam Lawson, for example. Kimi blew me out of the water in terms of expectations. But I think for a lot of the others to be thrown into this as your first race, I give them grace on this. And I think that it's hard to have too high of expectations in a situation like this. And hopefully they took it as a learning opportunity and we'll come back stronger and we'll see how they fare in China. But I think it's worth giving them a pass on this one, just given how crazy it was.
And I mean, I'm not as tapped into the whole universe of F1, F2 as you are, but wasn't F2 rained out? Weren't there other races canceled before this?
Yeah, they definitely have had bad conditions in F2 as well, but I think it's different being in a Formula One car. It's just a totally different beast. It's a totally different sport. Like I feel like personally only so much you can prepare to jump into your first race in a Formula One car with all the moving pieces and then add all the crazy conditions and happenings to that. I feel like it's hard, but I also understand the perspective of like, this is the big leagues and you got to be able to handle it. And I just think when you have someone like Alonso and Carlos Sainz, who are veteran drivers, also not finishing and spinning out, I think you have to give them a little bit of a pass personally.
Whether you're traveling, advancing your career, or just love learning, speaking a new language opens up incredible opportunities, and Rosetta Stone makes it easier and more immersive than ever. I've been on a French language learning journey for years, and one of the hardest things can be perfecting my pronunciation, and Rosetta Stone has built-in true accent speech recognition technology that provides real-time feedback, which has helped me sound so much more natural. It's basically like having a personal language coach guiding your accent every step of the way. Don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential now. Paddock Project listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Don't miss out. Go to rosettastone.com today and start learning today. Even if you think it's a bit overhyped, AI is suddenly everywhere, from customer service to Formula Auto racing. If it's not in your industry yet, it's coming fast. But AI needs a lot of speed and computing power, so how do you compete without costs spinning out? Time to race to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a blazing fast and secure platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, plus all your AI and machine learning workloads. OCI costs 50% less for compute and 80% less for networking. That is a lot of prize money. Thousands of businesses have already upgraded to OCI, including Vodafone, Thomson Reuters, and Suno AI. Right now, Oracle is offering to cut your current cloud bill in half if you move to OCI for new U.S. customers with minimum financial commitment. Offer ends May 31st. See if your company qualifies for this special offer at oracle.com/paddock. That's oracle.com/paddock. Could your daily routine be full of hormone disruptors? There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now, in our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. To combat this, we've been loving Hormone Harmony from Happy Mammoth, which contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens that help the body adapt to any stressors. With over 30,000 reviews and counting, a bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code PADDOCKPROJECT at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code PADDOCKPROJECT for 15% off today.
Okay, next big topic of conversation. So we talked about this a little bit, but the papaya rules situation, or whatever flavor of team orders that McLaren showed us in Australia. Again, it was, they told Oscar to hold position theoretically to be able to clear the back markers, but I feel like it was kind of an excuse and not super understandable, and they didn't give him favorable pit stop strategy either, and this was his home race, and I don't think that they should have given Oscar preferential treatment necessarily, but I think they definitely should have just let them race. I don't really understand why they felt the need to do that. And I think one interesting question there is, like, would Oscar have potentially won or even been on podium if they had let him pass Lando from that very first opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. In those conditions, they were probably trying to be a little bit more conservative about it and secure the 1-2 and just weren't ready to fight it out at that point.
One other McLaren note is that someone put in our Discord, and I agree with this, that it seems like Lando had practiced his starts over the offseason. So that was fun to see. Lando taking it to Max and being able to stay ahead. He didn't get passed on any of the starts. So I loved that improvement there. Let's talk about Ferrari. So Hamilton's comments after the race was that it went a lot worse than I thought it would go. And both Ferrari drivers throughout the race were telling their engineers to basically leave them alone. And the Ferrari radios were just wild. Like, there was, of course, the Charles moment. How could we not talk about that earlier than this point in the podcast? But when Charles goes, "Is there a leakage?" And the Ferrari engineer goes, "What leakage?" And he goes, "There's water in my seat." And he goes something, the engineer goes something like, "It's water." And then Charles goes, "Let's add that to the words of wisdom." Like, how unhelpful can you be? People were dying in the bar over that, I felt like.
Like, yeah, it's raining.
Yeah, it's raining and it's wet, but that doesn't mean his seat should be filling with water. Like, he shouldn't be drowning, for so to speak. The other one was they kept trying to get Lewis to use the K1 button, which I don't know if everyone heard that so many times, but it was, they kept being like, okay, K1, K1. K1 is the overtake button on the Ferrari steering wheel. And I guess they wanted Lewis to use it for data, for practice. So as he was getting closer, he could press that button and do the overtake situation. But he kept being like, I'm not close enough and I will, leave me to it. Like, let me handle it. He just wouldn't leave him alone. And I felt like it was just kind of bad vibes on the radio between the Ferraris and their engineers.
They just needed to leave them alone at a certain point, I think.
Yeah. And then the strategy as well. So Liam and Gabriel Bortoleto spun out on one of the laps, which gave the Ferraris basically a free pit stop, but that didn't seem to help them much because Ferrari kept them out on slicks for too long, gave them mixed messaging about the rain. Lewis on the radio was like, kind of, you wasted time not pitting me to inters. Like, you didn't say the rain was going to be this bad. So that was not great. And on top of all of that, it just didn't seem like they had great pace. I think Lewis really couldn't get out of his starting P8 position for a really long time. He was stuck behind Albon and he did swear on the radio, but I'm not sure if he was fined for that or not. So we'll find out. The last main talking point, I feel like, for the race is the Red Bull pace. So there were some questionable tire strategy choices, putting Max on the mediums when everyone else was on the hards, when they switched to slicks, and then trying to keep him out on the slicks for really long instead of switching him back to inters when they probably should have. And that said, it was good enough for Max to almost take the win. So I guess there's only so much you can criticize their strategy there because Max was so close to finishing P1. I think one more lap and it was probably possible. Yeah, Sloan, I feel like the vibe in the bar for the last two laps of that race was insane. People's heart rates were very elevated. I think the last thing on Red Bull is this question of Yuki versus Liam. Obviously, they picked Liam for the seat. Liam did not qualify super well, did not perform well in the race. Yuki outqualified him and also outscored him in terms of points. And Yuki actually had an incredible race and then got kind of fumbled on a pit stop where he tumbled out of the points. But he was looking good. And I wonder how fast that Racing Bull car is, how much that's reflecting Yuki's performance, so to speak, versus maybe just the car pace in and of itself. And does Liam get a pass this race, or are they going to be expecting a lot more from him coming up? And should they have expected more from him for this race? So I think only time will tell on that, but I'm very curious about the Yuki situation. So for standings, just the first race of the season, we have a long way to go, but where do we stand? Lando Norris is leading the World Drivers Championship for the first time in his career. As a reminder, there's also no fastest lap point anymore. So Lando did get fastest lap, did win the race, but he is sitting at 25 points because there is no point for that fastest lap. Then we have Max Verstappen at 18 points in P2. George Russell, 15, Kimi Antonelli, 12, Alex Albon, 10, Lance Stroll, 8, Nico Hülkenberg, 6, Charles Leclerc, 4, Oscar Piastri, 2, and Lewis Hamilton, 1. And the rest are currently pointsless.
For constructors, we have McLaren in first with 27 points, tied with Mercedes also at 27 points. Then we have Red Bull, number 3 with 18 points, Williams with 10, Aston Martin with 8, Sauber with 6, Ferrari with 5, and then we have Alpine, Racing Bulls, and Haas all at 0.
Going to be crazy, and we are going right into the Chinese Grand Prix this week, so we'll do a very quick preview. It's going to be at the Shanghai International Circuit, which is 5.4 kilometers, 56 laps, two DRS zones. And when watching the race this weekend, definitely look out for the aerial shots of the track. It's designed to look like the Chinese symbol for Shang, meaning upwards, and expect an exciting start since the first sectors have three back-to-back turns. They get tighter and tighter. The drivers also love turns 7 and 8 since they're long, winding, super high G-force. And this circuit also features one of the longest straights on the calendar at 1.2 kilometers, and that ends with a hairpin at turns 14 and 15. So it's a fun track, but it's killer on the tires. Albon once described it as having 1,000 racing lines. So there's going to be a lot of excitement. I think in terms of setups, teams will try to balance the low downforce setup, making the most of that long straight while also favoring a medium to high downforce setup to manage tire drag on this very twisty track. So expect to see some differences there.
So just a little history about the track. It was built in 2003 in a marshy area in the suburban Jiading district northwest of Shanghai. And it took 18 months to build and had its first race in 2004. Crazy, but the lap record is still held by Michael Schumacher from the first Chinese Grand Prix in 2004.
Yeah, that's wild. All right, hot takes and predictions for the Chinese Grand Prix. I'm going to go very hot. I'm going to say a double Ferrari top five. I'm keeping the delusion alive, and I think they'll bounce back and hopefully redeem the radios and the performance this past race. Sloan, do you have any predictions?
Well, my heart still hurts for Oscar, so I'm just going to say Oscar podium because that's what I want and because I feel terrible for him right now.
I love that. Oscar podium. You heard it here first. One very exciting thing also happening this weekend is it's F1 Academy kicking off. It's the first of seven races for their season, and all of them are co-located with F1 again. Last year, the series saw four different winners, seven different drivers on podium, and the championship was decided by more than 100 points. Abby Pulling was very dominant last year. The average age of the grid has gotten younger, which is exciting, especially when you think about pipelines and developing drivers as young as possible. So that's great. And speaking of pipeline, Mercedes recently announced their junior program class of 2025. And there are three female drivers now in the program, which makes up 25% of the class. And that's a higher proportion than any F1 junior program in the past in history. So that's great. 25% female. So A, let's go Mercedes, and B, let's go Dorian Pain, of course, racing in F1 Academy. We also have Luna Fluxa, a 14-year-old Spanish karter. And then we have a new addition, 12-year-old Julia Montlaur from France. So here is the grid. We have some veterans, some newcomers. In terms of our veterans, we have Chloe Chambers, who's supported by Red Bull Ford. She'll be racing for Campos. And then we have Aurelia Nobles, supported by Puma, racing for ArtGP. Chloe Chong, supported by Charlotte Tilbury and racing for Rodin. We have Dorian Pain, who's supported by Mercedes, racing for Prema. Leah Block, supported by Williams, racing for ArtGP. Maya Vogue, supported by Ferrari, racing for MP Motorsport. And Tina Hausman, supported by Aston Martin and racing for Prema. So those are our veterans. In terms of our newcomers, we have lots of them, which is very exciting. We have Nicole Havdra, who's supported by Amex, racing for High Tech from Canada. We have Nina Godman, supported by Alpine and racing for Prema. She's from the Netherlands. And then we have Ella Felbermeier, supported by Kick Sauber and racing for Rodin from Austria. Courtney Krohn, an American, who is supported by Haas and racing for ArtGP. Ava Anastasiadis, supported by Tagier and racing for High Tech from Australia. Alba Larsen, supported by Tommy Hilfiger and racing for MP Motorsport. She's from Denmark. And Rafaela Ferreira, supported by RB, racing for Campos from Brazil. And Ella Lloyd, supported by McLaren, racing for Rodin from the UK. Alicia Palmowski, supported by Red Bull and racing for Campos, also from the UK. And then we have Wei Shi, supported by Juice Sports, racing for High Tech. She's from China, so this will be a home race for her, which is very exciting. And then we have Joanne Seconte, supported by F1 Academy, racing for MP Motorsport and from Australia. So just a reminder of the race weekend format, it actually has changed a bit this year. So we have two free practice sessions of up to 40 minutes each, two races, one qualifying session for both races that lasts for 30 minutes. And in qualifying, each driver's fastest lap will set the grid for race two. And the starting grid for race one will be set by reversing the top eight drivers from qualifying. So that's always a fun little surprise and mix up. So drivers in 9th to 18th will start where they qualified, but drivers 1 through 8 will be reversed for race one. And 2 points will be awarded to the driver that is shown on pole position on the final grid for race two. And then, of course, the races one and two, both 30 minutes long. For race one, points will be awarded up to the top 8 classified drivers in a sliding scale of 10 points for the winner, then 8 and down to 1 point for P8. And then for race two, a little bit different, the top 10 drivers will score 25 points all the way down to 1 point respectively. And in each race, a point will be awarded for the fastest lap. So they're still keeping the fastest lap point in F1 Academy, even though they have said goodbye to it in F1. But I'm so excited to see these ladies out on track in China. It's going to be a super fun, action-packed weekend, and we'll be back to recap it. So thank you all so much for listening to the Australian Grand Prix recap. We are finally back. We'll be recapping every race as per usual, hopefully with episodes coming out on Mondays, sometimes Tuesdays, to be determined, but we'll get it to you as fast as we possibly can. And Sloan, thank you so much for joining. It's so fun to chat.
Thank you.